Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Okayness, Dave.
Okayness. Where is okayness? Is that middle states there, someplace around Kansas?
Well, I've traveled through 48 states and I haven't found it yet. When I'm thinking about okayness, it's feeling okay in any situation.
So we're talking about feeling okay for ourselves or other people feeling okay?
I think it's both, but what we're trying to talk about today is how can we make sure others feel okay during either a sales process or when you're leading people.
Wow. And that is absolutely a really, really critical concept there. We want people to feel good about themselves if we want to have any chance at all about influencing them, persuading them to a specific perspective, or getting information from them. Is that what you're talking about?
It's exactly what I'm talking about, Dave.
So how does that come into play where we make people feel not okay? Because if we're talking about making people feel okay, then the implication is sometimes, probably not by design, we make people feel not okay.
Well, a lot of times it can be in the words that I use. We're asking no jargon, no big words. I think USA Today was written on a fifth grade level, so people will read it. I don't suppose you've been to a meeting and someone had just got their, you know, calendar of the day club and every day is a different word, and they try to use that word to sound like an erudite.
Whoa. Really? You're going to throw erudite out there? Now our listeners are going to do one of two things. They're either A, going to feel really stupid because they don't know what this highfalutin erudite means, and they're going to turn us off. So you just lost half our listeners, Darren. Why did you say that?
What I was sharing was not to do, and I demonstrated how effective that can be at getting rid of an audience when you use big words and when you use jargon and when you use things like that, that people do not feel okay because they feel either they should know what that word means or they feel like that person thinks he or she is smarter than I am or better than I am.
But wait a second. If I use large words in my vocabulary, doesn't that actually send a signal that I'm assuming that you are educated and intelligent enough to understand what I'm saying? Aren't I actually trying to make you feel okay by speaking up to you instead of down to you?
Well, have you ever been to a cocktail party and someone knows too much about something and carries on and uses big words and some people clearly don't know what that person is talking about? Has that ever happened to you?
Usually it happens to the people around me.
Right. And you can sense that they feel uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, no. Yes, absolutely. Right. So what you're saying is, although it may seem counterintuitive, look at me, I'm a big shot, but this is really what people are saying when they use words that are, I can't think of a word that's small enough to describe that. So we want to make people feel okay by not using big words. Now, you mentioned jargon as well. Give me an example of jargon.
Well, I can tell you in high school, in my history class, the teacher asked me to do a presentation on the ERA, but she wasn't clear. And I, being a baseball fan, decided to do it on the earned run average, the best way to judge a pitcher's performance, and not the Equal Rights Amendment, because she used jargon that I was either unclear or I chose to be unclear. So many industries have jargon that we assume people will know what they mean, and they don't. If you're a sports fan, it's filled with jargon. You know, it's ERA, it's, you know, even batting average. People don't know how to calculate that. It's, you know, TD, it's, you know, all the, you play hockey, Dave, all those penalties, people don't even know what those are. And that's just in sports, which we like. Imagine in business where every industry has jargon. You were in the military. My hunch is you had SOPs for everything. Would that not be fair?
That was absolutely. We had an entire TLA department. That's three-letter acronym, folks. So it's funny. You were talking about hockey the other day. I was talking to somebody, and I was talking about the long change. And they looked at me like I was crazy. What, someone takes too much time in the dressing room? Mm. I'm like, no, it's the second period where your goalie is the farthest away from your bench, and you're at risk of changing offsides under the right circumstances because you can jump over the boards inside the attack zone. Now, for all of our listeners out there, I'm now using hockey jargon. And if you're not a hockey fan, you have no clue what I'm talking about. Imagine being in a situation where you're trying to get somebody to, you're trying to connect with somebody, and you make them feel small because you talk about things they're unfamiliar with.
Right.
So what's a good way to avoid that? I need to use jargon sometimes, right? We sometimes need to use jargon, or we sometimes need to use words that people may not be familiar with. How do you do it in such a way that you don't make them feel small? Because you could also, you know, my wife, true story here, we there was a period of time where I was being an idiot. Well, let's be candid, that period hasn't ended yet. But this particular example of idiocy has, because this was, you know, years ago, where I would say something like, you know what that means, don't you? And then now that's become a sort of an inside joke for us about talking down to each other. So how do you handle that so you're not talking down to somebody?
Well, one, do I need to use the jargon word generally, right? Do I need to use it? So let's pretend I don't, then I rephrase it so it's a word that everyone can understand. That's one, right? Two, if I have to use that jargon word, I will define it in the next sentence so they understand what that is. Or I might say, a lot of people don't understand what this is. This is how I define it. So they don't have to say, I don't understand it. I say, you know, when I speak with people, some people don't understand it. And so this is how I share what it means. And so that person can keep their okayness during the entire time.
All right. So we went by pretty quick with that. Give us one concrete example of either when you inappropriately and incorrectly made somebody feel small by using jargon or a large word, or you were able to protect. Or, let's do it this way. Give us that example and then give us a better way to handle it so we can really see the difference.
So years ago, Dave, I was in sales, and we do an assessment, an evaluation of a company. And one of the weaknesses is called self-limiting record collection. And when I said that, the guy said to me, why are we collecting albums for our team? And I said, oh, my apologies. I can't believe I said that. What I'm talking about here, I'm going to use the technical term called head trash. It's what are some of the ideas that you say to yourself or your team says to themselves that may not allow them to be as effective as they can in the sales process. And the guy goes, I really like head trash. That sounds like something everyone in our company would embrace. So that was part of the language we use moving forward was head trash.
And so head trash is a pretty common term where yes. Self-limiting record collections sounds like, okay, I've got enough space for 500 albums. I have just bought my 501st, so I got to get rid of Led Zeppelin Zofo. Don't worry, folks. I would never get rid of that album. But I've got to get rid of Zofo because I have no more room for any more albums. And so that's what self-limiting record collection sounds like. Now you use that in a sales presentation and the person scratching their head. In this particular case, you were fortunate that instead of the person had enough self-awareness and strong enough ego that he could say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Because some people they're fragile. I mean, we all, or it's a bad day.
Exactly.
And so in the future, I assume when you're having that conversation with future prospects, instead of self-limiting record collections, you would say, and some people have head trash that keep them from making the sale.
Correct. So that term, self-limiting record collection, it is out of my nomenclature, Dave.
Oh, okay. Nomenclature. So that's like the kiln where we fire and make those little garden gnomes. Is that what that is?
Wow. No, I see. Once again, see how easily we can get people to feel not okay when we don't even try to do so. That's just out of my vocabulary.
There you go.
I don't use that word, that phrase anymore in any sales call, is my point.
So really trying to figure out where I go after my definition of nomenclature on that one. So instead, I assume you now just say head trash, because most people, I think, understand head trash.
Yes. And I even define the head trash as well.
So great. So this is the second part of my question. And so now let's pretend for our listeners that I'm your prospect and you want to have that conversation about head trash with me, and you want to use that word and define it. What's that sound like?
So one of the things we'll be looking at, Dave, is these five hidden weaknesses that people don't know they have, including one would be head trash, which is, what are the things that you've either been taught or you've learned that's stuck in your head that get in your way of your ability to be as successful as you can possibly be?
Well, that's so simple, which is blank, 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 blank.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another advantage to doing that, too. Especially if you have to use, like, head trash in and of itself, as I said, I think is a fairly commonly understood term. But if you have to use one that's not commonly understood and you're box in that corner and you say, which is, and you explain it in a simple way.
Yep.
Einstein once said that an expert is somebody who makes these very difficult, and I'm paraphrasing, folks, so don't Google me on this, but it makes it very difficult understandable, right? And so we set ourselves up to be experts when we can break down this ridiculous nomenclature, just means how we call things.
Correct.
So, okay. So avoid big words, obscure words, jargon words. How else do we accidentally make people not feel good about themselves and so possibly alienate them?
A lot of times it's done through education. If I have a degree or a post degree or whatever we're going to call it, that can alienate some people, and that salesperson may not be trying to do it. I have a pretty vivid example if you'd like to hear it.
Sure. Tell me about it.
Well, I had a client that was a very successful business owner, a multimillionaire, and one of his salespeople insisted on having his degree on his business card, and the business owner never went to college, graduated high school. And that in itself, every day that business owner has to look at that card of his salesperson and think to himself, geez, I never went to school. I never have a degree. And even though he's so successful, it bothered him.
So in this particular case, he was bothered by one of his salespeople. Did that negatively impact their relationship?
I think it did subconsciously, and that's why I suggested to the salesperson to get rid of it. And plus, if that salesperson hands out a business card to a prospect and it has a very well-known institution and a degree, that might make that prospect feel intimidated based on that person's educational background. And that educational background had nothing to do with that person's ability to sell.
Right. In fact, some of the best salespeople I've ever met have no college whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
My first real sales manager. And he was very ashamed of the fact that he didn't have college. And he was one of the smartest people I've ever met. Yeah. And certainly a great student of human nature, an amazing student of human nature. I consider him my graduate professor in salesmanship, mm-hmm, and reading people. And for him, that was a huge problem that he did not have a college degree. And so I could see where a case like that that could be problematic.
Exactly.
Okay, so avoid big words, avoid jargon words, avoid obscure words. Don't go on and on about your education. What are the other common pitfalls in making people feel not okay?
I would say another one is coming across too smart. It goes back to that cocktail party when someone knows too much. And I ask my clients, what do you want to do at a cocktail party when someone knows too much? And they say they either want to prove that they're wrong, change the subject, walk away, or some, probably from the East Coast like us, want to punch them in the face.
Yeah, I probably outgrown the punch them in the face phase of my life. I think it was last summer.
You're evolved.
Just old. So don't come off too smart. This actually dovetails right into one of probably the best rapport building skills. And what we're really talking about is creating a relationship with people or rapport. And one of the best rapport building skills, relationship creating skills I've ever come across. Sorry, that was your cue to ask a question, Darren.
Well, tell me, I didn't sense there was enough of a pause for me to ask.
Oh, yeah, my bad. Right. By the way, folks, that's another way you can make sure people don't feel bad about themselves is taking responsibility.
Exactly.
Even when it's not your fault. I want to say that again, because that's really important. You have to keep your ego in check. We're going to do a whole, I don't know if we're going to do a whole segment, but we're going to touch on at some point transactional analysis. Mm-hmm. And this is a case where you want to really make sure that your child stays in the car seat in the car. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what I'm talking about, and I suspect most of you don't, and that's okay because it's a pretty obscure area of study, come back for that recording.
Absolutely.
By the way, I completely lost my train of thought. Oh, skill. The best skill to not come off too smart is the ability to ask good questions. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I tell my clients, whoever asks the best questions is the one who gets the contract. And actually, if you're talking, you're not selling. You know, if you're talking, you are not selling. So you're asking questions so they can do the talking. And especially in rapport building, I love your example of rescuing people. So, you know, it's my fault. It's my bad. You know, if you're watching a sports game, someone makes a bad pass or was a good pass, they always go, my bad. I did that. Because it keeps that okayness. Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with what you're talking about, Dave.
It keeps that okayness. And it also, as a leader, from a leadership perspective, let's switch hats here.
Please.
When you show you're vulnerable by saying, I made a mistake and taking that off of them, you're actually giving people permission to be vulnerable themselves, and you need to know where your team's weaknesses are so you can bolster them up and set them up for success. Our number one job as a leader is to set people up for success. When I make you feel okay about yourself, then you're willing to share with me your vulnerabilities, and then I can either help you strengthen them or I reinforce you by providing you some sort of backstop in the areas that you're not as strong. And I put you in positions where I play to your strengths. So okayness is huge in sales and in leadership.
Right. And here's one quick example. If any parents are out there, one day I was really upset. My son didn't do his homework. And I just wanted to let him know how angry I was at him. And I said, son, can I ask you a question? Why didn't you do your homework? He goes, Dad, you know, I just didn't want to do it. And I go, you know what, son? I didn't make all my calls today. And so how about this? How about for the rest of the week, you report back on all the homework you did, and I'll report back on all the calls that I did. And you know what? My calls went up and his homework got better. So if you want to be valuable, Be vulnerable.
Yeah. Just sit on that for a second. If you want to be valuable, be vulnerable. You know, in leadership, there's this misnomer, in my opinion, right, that we have to be perfect, that we can't sweat. You know, I always think of, remember that movie Master and Commander was a book first, and the Russell Crowe character, the captain of the ship, right? And every decision he makes, he has to be sure 100% about, right? He can't show any doubt or his crew isn't going to follow him. That's not real life. Now, I don't mean you become a sniveling idiot out there. Oh, I don't know what to do, right? It's okay to ask for help, which is, by the way, a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
Asking about help is another way to make people feel okay about themselves. But you're showing vulnerability. There's a right way to do it. But by showing vulnerability, you allow your team to be vulnerable. It means they'll ask for help and they won't try and gloss over things that they cannot do. And that's how you get a higher functioning team.
Absolutely.
How's that work in sales?
Well, it's the same thing, because one of the key components of sales is uncovering pain. And if I can demonstrate any sort of vulnerability, then they're going to feel comfortable sharing what's going on with them. And I become a real person first and not someone that's out to get the Bucko's steak knives at the end of the month or the great gift, you know, that might happen at the end of the year. I'm actually looking out for your best interest. When I demonstrate vulnerability, it allows you to become real. And we have a real conversation, because let's face it, you've been in sales and in leadership, and I've been in leadership and sales. If we want to make change, we have to figure out the challenges that they have so we can figure out how to fix those.
Right. And the reason we're doing this podcast, folks, is that Darren and I both recognize that sales and leadership are really two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. It's about making change, positive, good change. If you're selling something because it's your job to sell it, not because what you're selling is going to help people in a positive way, and you're okay with that, unsubscribe from this podcast right now, please, because I don't want to help you do your job. Mm-hmm. But if your motivation is to be better at your job so you could help more people because your product or service does that, or as a leader, you can help grow your organization, help grow your team as individuals, grow within themselves, improve their lives. If it's outward focus, helping other people, please continue to listen. You're our kind of people. And so making people okay, making people feel good about themselves is absolutely probably, if you learn nothing else, the most important thing you can learn.
I would echo that, Dave. That was well stated.
Anything else about how we can help our listeners help their tribe, their stakeholders, feel okay about themselves?
Well, I mean, it goes back to connecting 101. People like to talk about themselves. Provide opportunities where they get to talk about themselves. That'll make them feel okay. But if you say to me, you have a bachelor's and I in a particular industry, and I say, well, I have a master's in that industry, I'm just letting you know that we're both in the same industry, you know, in the same educational background, but I've just allowed you to feel not okay. So sometimes we do it, we don't even know that we're doing it. So I think this podcast is really helpful for people to think about, in my life, in sales and in leadership, what have I done to exclude people or make them feel not okay? And I didn't even intend to do it. So taking a checkpoint as far as a barometer, if you will, as far as where I stand in the past and now today, moving forward, how am I going to make sure that does not happen again? And I think the tips and suggestions we've provided will be a great starting point for that to occur.
Actually, it's interesting. You brought back a memory for me of a time, and I want to play this in the sales arena, playing your court. I hope you don't mind.
Please.
Back when I was in sales, I remember I made a sales call on a company. They were a wine distributor, retail. So people they had an inside sales force. They were actually all over the country. And, you know, they had members and they would recommend wines and sell them, et cetera. We're talking very high-end wines. The person I was dealing with, who was a good friend of the owner's and was there as a consultant to help them with their technology, which is what I was selling, he was a former Canadian fighter pilot, F-16 pilot, and astronaut with a degree, an advanced degree in engineering.
Mm.
So, of course, I have to say, oh, I was in, flew in the Navy and I have a degree in engineering. And we got into this one-upmanship contest that I could not win. Even if I could have won, I couldn't have won because winning would have been losing. But what I meant was, he out-degreed me. He out, you know, flew me. He out-everything me, if you were to sort of look at it from that perspective. And at that time, that got under my skin as the salesperson. And so I kept trying to connect with him by matching him.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of letting him win, I engaged in a game. Now, the end result, I know my product was a better product than the one they ended up with. Did you hear what I just said?
I did.
I blew it because I couldn't keep my ego in check, because I wasn't self-aware enough to understand that I wasn't feeling okay about myself. I allowed this company to get an inferior product and I failed. So it's not just about making the other people feel okay. It's about making sure that you're okay not feeling okay. You don't have to win.
Sure. Can I tell you something, Dave? I hear that a lot, that people, when I share this, they tell me over and over again how they have blown it. And it's really helpful to acknowledge it and understand it and then move forward. If you notice, I just gave an example of feeling okay by going, Dave, I hear that a lot. A lot of people tell me that. So the fact that Dave just shared that, hey, I blew it, I want him to still feel okay by saying, you know, you're not the first person that's told me this. I hear this all the time. And then just one thing I just want to share with Dave, if I may, is sales. And I'll say this a lot of times. Sales is not a place to get your emotional needs met. Sales is a place to go to the bank that allows you to buy the things to get your emotional needs met.
Well said. And I mean, I think from a sales perspective, you have to, and leadership actually, from both perspectives, your job is to make sure the other people get their emotional needs met.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's your job, one of your jobs in sales and leadership. And I appreciate your saying that, not alone. And that, by the way, is probably the last technique on making people feel okay, is if there's a bad reaction or a negative reaction, right, or unlooked for reaction, the last thing in the world I want to do is say, wow, that's so weird you feel that way, because nobody else has ever reacted that way to me. Are you a freak?
Yes. Yes.
So, yes. And I promise you, if one person's feeling that way, even if you've never encountered it before, I promise you, if one person's feeling that way, there's 1,000 people. There's 330 million people in this country. I think it's safe to say that at least 1% of them, 3 million, felt the way that individual felt. So they're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. And if you've actually heard some of your prospects or clients or employees say it, you can say, I hear that a lot. That people said this, like you did. So it allows, there's some reassurance there. And so I build that okayness. So when I ask deeper questions later on, they're going to feel more comfortable sharing that, because I save them the first time. So they feel okay about themselves.
And folks, if, you know, some of you might be reacting right now and thinking, but what if I haven't heard that a lot and I don't want to lie or fib, even if it's a white lie intended to help, that's okay. It's a common reaction as well. In fact, that's my reaction. So for me, I prefer, if I haven't heard it a lot, to say it's not uncommon for people to feel that way.
That's right.
Because that, I guarantee you, is true. Because what does uncommon mean? You know, that's different for everybody.
That's right.
And I guarantee they're not the only person in the world, as I just said a minute ago, who feels that way. So if you've heard it a lot, that's great. Or if you think it's okay, and that's fine too, to just say that because it makes people feel good. If you're one of those people like me who goes, I don't want to ever be in a habit of speaking an untruth, then you find a way to speak it truthfully.
Beautiful.
All right. Well, hopefully everybody out there listening feels okay about this episode and about themselves, because I know I feel pretty good about what we covered. How about you, Darren?
I feel great. I think we covered a lot of good things, and I think a lot of people can go, either I've never heard that before, I knew it and I forgot about it, or I do it and it reinforces it. So either way, I think everybody should feel okay.
I'm okay with that. All right, then, until next time.
That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name's Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at LockedOnLeadership.com or DarrenCecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.